So one of the very first things I discovered when I started working in the Akashic Records is that words alone, they just don't do it. They can be very limiting when it comes to describing everything that I'm experiencing when I'm in the records. So I decided to, since words are not enough, I created an audio-visual program and a presentation for tonight to help explain my current understanding and experience of the records. So in words and pictures, here we go. My name is Juliette Loyer. That's my current legal name in this lifetime. My soul has had other names in other lifetimes, but it's the vibration of the name Juliette Loyer that's my current energy signature. It's what allows me to access the Akashic Records of me in this lifetime. So the vibration of my name is the energetic key, if you will, that allows me to unlock the door to my Akashic Records, which allow me to not only view my soul's path in this lifetime, but in all of my soul's incarnations. And that is really important to me, because as Eugene Kleiner once put it so very well, it's difficult to see the picture when you're inside the frame. But with the help of the Akashic Records, I'm able to step outside the frame to glimpse some breathtakingly expansive views of my soul and its journey. To illustrate, I'm going to share a story with you about something that happened to me while I was preparing for this evening. Although I've spoken here at the TS 3 times about feng shui before, and I gave Akashic Record readings for 3 years here at the Quest Bookshop, I have to tell you that I was feeling some pretty serious anxiety about giving this talk tonight. I mean, I love the Akashic Records so much. How could I ever do them justice? How could I encapsulate in 1 hour what the records are and what they mean to me, and how much I've learned and healed and grown by working in the records for nearly 20 years? So, as I was sitting at my desk one Sunday afternoon, all ready to start typing my notes, but I couldn't get past myself. I couldn't move outside of my troubled frame of mind to see how and where to begin. So in that moment, I decided to do what made the most sense to me. I decided to open my Akashic Records and ask for some clarity and guidance. I knew that I needed to see beyond my own blind spot, so that I could see what was behind all those feelings. I needed to ask my masters, teachers, and loved ones about the root cause of my paralyzing fear. So I opened the Akashic Records of me, of the soul currently known as Juliette Loyer. And while I was opening my records, I felt this tightness in my spinal column that intensified behind my heart and just radiated out, extended to my shoulders. And before I could even say the records are now open, I burst into a torrent of tears. I mean, whoa, okay, so that was not what I expected. What I expected was some gentle encouragement and guidance from my Akashic Masters, teachers, and loved ones. But instead, what I got were such strong physical and emotional reactions that they caused me to just round my back and hunch my shoulders, just as a way to relax my spine, but partly as a way to protect my heart, which suddenly felt heavy and tender and bruised, as if someone had kicked me in the chest. So where did that come from? I asked out loud. My masters, teachers, and loved ones who love me so much and who know the deepest parts of my heart and soul, they encircled me in an energetic group hug. And then they said, "We'd like to help you clear something up and out before you get started on your notes. You ask to know the root cause of the fear that you're feeling in regard to speaking at this place that you love and where you always feel so welcome. So let's take a few steps back so you can get a bigger picture. Then once you get the karmic backstory, you'll be able to move forward again. And you'll be able to sing your song more easily." Excuse me? Sing my song? You want me to sing? You're kidding, right? I mean, I haven't sung in years. There is no way I'll be singing that night, thank you very much. I would be totally mortified. "Interesting choice of words," said my masters, teachers, and loved ones. not once to waste any time, since time is merely a human construct that doesn't exist in the Akashic Records, my masters, teachers, and loved ones took me back in consciousness to the point of my soul's inception, to that very instant when my soul individuated from the oneness to experience itself as God. Oh my God, I was so happy, I was so grateful. No words could describe the elation that my soul felt in that instant. So I turned to my Creator and I asked, "How can I ever thank you?" "Sing your song," my Creator replied. "In every lifetime, in whatever ways you choose, sing the song of your creation. Be true to your own divine nature and express it, express us as fully and as deeply as you can. Experience yourself as the God that you are and see yourself in all other beings. And despite what this world may present to you as real, see beyond the illusion, beyond the separation, and remember that you are one with all that is. And share that knowing with everyone you meet. Breathe it, think it, write it, teach it, dance it, sing it. Make it your soul's work until you decide to make your way back home. Make each lifetime a testament and a song that expresses your soul's divine origin and reminds other souls of theirs." Okay, I was beginning to see the picture. From the very moment of its inception, my soul had its plan. Sing the song of my creation and express my divine self in whatever ways I choose. Great, I thought. I've got it. So why is the idea of singing my song causing me so much pain in this moment? Before I could even finish my question, my masters, teachers, and loved ones began showing me a number of lifetimes in which I sang my song. Some were magnificent incarnations during which I achieved my purpose with singular success. But in others, I lost my way, and my soul forgot its deepest purpose. In still other incarnations, I was prevented from singing my song, which sometimes cost me that human life. I'd been stoned and imprisoned for singing my Creator's praises. I'd been burned alive and had my feet cut off for spreading my then heretical belief that not only are all beings equal in the eyes of our Creator, glorious and divine by birthright, we are all aspects of the Creator ourselves. So it was those lifetimes, those failures and disappointments, those deaths, those were the things that had entered my awareness when I opened my Akashic Records and asked about my fear. My masters, teachers, and loved ones had answered my seemingly simple question about my current feelings by showing me how and why they began. But then the energy shifted, and they brought me back to the present. They changed the picture entirely, and they said, "It's time now, Juliet. Do you see? All that karmic pain is what you can heal now. The timing and the means are perfect. When you were invited to speak to this lovely group of open-minded seekers, you are being invited to heal lifetimes of wounding and fear. And by accepting the invitation and showing up, you now have the opportunity to release the past and heal this karma and fearlessly sing your song. So relax. Take a good deep breath and sing your song. Express yourself as only you can. But before you do, we'd like to reveal just one more piece of the picture. Not to give you stage fright or anything, but some of your people in the audience tonight, those persecutors are in your previous incarnations, well, they're here tonight. They're here tonight, too. Because not only did they fulfill their soul's purpose of helping you all experience lessons around illusion and separation and judgment, they, in various lifetimes, Juliet, were judged and persecuted by you. As they say, what goes around comes around, eh? It's the law of cause and effect. So forgive yourself. Forgive them and receive their forgiveness. Thank you, everybody. And then move forward with a new perspective that allows you to see that you've all been working together in service of your Creator. And human appearances aside, You're all on your way back to the love that made you. You've just been involved in these cycles of showing each other what love is and what it isn't. So transcend the dualistic notions of victim and abuser, and of only right and only wrong, and of only one way for that matter. Transcend the comparisons that lead to judgment and to placing others above or below you when you don't see them eye to eye, heart to heart, and soul to soul. Transcend the human experience of love, which is fraught with emotions and conditions and expectations that keep you stuck in unhelpful patterns. And tap into the divine energy of love, that love without conditions, which is constant and unchanging. In that energy, in that realm of consciousness, in that dimension of love, you can transcend and transmute the conditions that have kept you mired in your muck, that karmic muck. And you can dispel the illusions of who you've been and remember who you truly are. And you can embrace everyone around you as individual sparks of light, making your way back to the heart of God as you merge with all that is. After taking that in for quite a while, I finally found my words. "Dudes," I said softly. That was some pretty heady stuff. My master's teachers and loved ones chuckled. "Well, okay, let's look at it another way then, in a way that even children can understand. Let's use an example that you know very well. Remember that book that we helped you write in your Akashic Records? Your spiritual parable about an apple named Evie?" I said, "Yeah." And they said, "Well, what does Evie do every day as she hangs out, no pun, on the tree of life?"
"I am in the tree and the tree is in me. We are one and the same."
That was my friend Paige. I'll introduce you later. She sings. Evie sings. Of course she sings. She sings about her love for the tree of life. She sings about her love for the creep. Oh my gosh. Evie's me. All along, while I was writing about Evie's adventures on Earth, I was writing about my soul and its journey, and in a much larger context, about the journey of every soul. "Bingo," said my master's teachers and loved ones. "And now you know, through Evie's experiences, that even those you perceived as your tormentors, your bullies as they're called today, they're just part of the illusion, part of the dream. For on the level of soul, they were your best teachers. They helped you remember what was real. They helped you remember your song. Even while Evie was a girl on Earth and forgot it for a while, just by merely being, she never stopped singing the song of her creation. And likewise, by showing up and being in all of your incarnations, you've never stopped singing the song of your creation. So let go of your past disappointments and all those feelings that don't support your soul's purpose. Just be. Just be. Be there. Be you. Share yourself and your love for the Akashic Records. And in so doing, you'll be singing your song with ease. Let your heart do the singing. It'll strike the right chords." Well, can I just tell you how different I felt in that moment and how free? I know it can sound trite when people say this, but I just have to say it. It was as if so many events in my past and in my past lives had all been leading up to just this moment, tonight. So my soul could gain this awareness and could experience this healing. So my heartfelt thanks to Paula and to John for inviting me to be here tonight. And thanks to all of you for being here. And to everyone watching this webcast, thank you so very much, wherever you are. We all, if we choose to, are being given an opportunity to participate in our own healing in ways both large and small. And through the information that my master's teachers and loved ones shared, we all just witnessed some powerful ways in which the Akashic Records can help us step outside the frame so we can glimpse the bigger picture of our lives from an eternal soul-level perspective. And speaking of the bigger picture, now that I've painted you a picture with some pretty broad brush strokes, I'd like to back up and focus on some details. And then after that, I'd like to share some examples of how the Akashic Records have helped me open the aperture of my consciousness and view the world through a much broader lens. So let's start with a quick definition. As I've come to experience them, the Akashic Records are a dimension of consciousness that contains a vibrational record of every thought, word, and action that a soul has ever experienced. So while I'm in the records, I'm receiving Akashic energy and information vibrationally by way of Akashic impressions. And so when I'm reading for someone and I say I'm getting the impression, I actually mean that quite literally, as in I'm feeling bodily sensations or emotions, or I'm seeing pictures or symbols or colors, or I'm viewing a little movie or hearing a conversation, or sometimes I hear keywords and phrases, and once in a while I even hear songs. But whatever impressions I'm getting, they're registering vibrationally in my body. And a lot of times a number of impressions are registering simultaneously. And I can process them all simultaneously too, because, well, when I'm in the Akashic Records, I'm also half out of my mind. Seriously though, I really mean that. When I'm in the Akashic Records, I'm in a state of consciousness that allows me to speak and process with my ordinary human mind. And yet simultaneously, I also have access to that vibrational field that some people call universal consciousness or the divine universal mind. So in a way, when I'm in the Akashic Records, my mind is functioning similarly to a computer that has a dual processor, and I can move seamlessly from one level of consciousness to another, downloading and synthesizing and translating all that I'm receiving. Another way of saying this would be from the individual personal computer that I call my human mind, I'm accessing the Akashic Internet, that vast vibrational field of divine universal consciousness. And then I'm given access to whatever is most relevant to the search words that are contained in the questions that I ask. And all of this is happening so instantaneously, so concurrently, that having to communicate all of this in human words, you know, everything I'm receiving, it can be rather cumbersome sometimes. Because in those times, those energetic impressions, those Akashic hits, as I like to call them, they really do illustrate the old adage that says a picture is worth 1,000 words. Only I'd paraphrase that slightly and say that an Akashic impression is worth 1,000 words, which often register in a nanosecond. I've actually had instances when I've gotten such a strong Akashic hit, which has resonated so deeply within me, that it feels like a lightning strike, and all I can say in those moments is, oh, I got it, I get it, I know. Because words are just way, way, way too inadequate to express what I know with my entire being in that moment. Some people envision the Akashic Records as a big library or a hall filled with record books, and I completely understand that idea, especially since we say that we read the Akashic Records, and also since some religions claim that your name is written in the Book of Life or the Book of God's Remembrance. So I don't disagree with the library analogy at all. It's just that, well, in the same way that physical books and libraries are expanding in form to include ebooks and the internet, and also especially because with the help of the internet, I can literally transcend space and time zones to work with students around the globe simultaneously, I've come to think of the Akashic Records as the ebook of life, with E also standing for etheric. Oh, the word Akasha, by the way, is a Sanskrit word that means etheric, or luminous sky. So rather than a book or a library, my personal picture of the records resembles something more like this. But even this picture of a luminous sky is limited by my human mind. So I don't get caught up in any kind of mental construct that would cause me to create like a one-size-fits-all definition or picture, especially because what I've come to learn is that just as the universe is constantly expanding and evolving, so are the Akashic Records. And so are my understanding and my experience of the Akashic Records. So the more I work with their light and their energy, the more expanded my understanding and my perspective become. So for me, personally, the best way to expedite my understanding of the Akashic Records comes down to a few key things. Practice, getting out of my own way, staying open to the flow of both the energy and the information that I'm receiving, and then trusting in not only the process itself, but in the fact that whatever I'm receiving, in whatever ways I'm receiving it, are perfect in that moment. Okay, so if I can use just an entirely different metaphor for a second. My husband and I have a samadhi flotation tank in our basement. Some people call this a sensory deprivation tank, because when you're lying in total blackness, deprived of sight and sound, and being buoyed up by 800 pounds of Epsom salt, it's a feeling of complete surrender, totally letting go. But in the letting go of the physical senses and feelings comes the ability to experience all kinds of things on other levels of consciousness. Just one example. After a really long float in our tank one day, our cousin Jay, who was in there for about 2.5 hours, he came out and he said, "I just watched myself somersault through space." And then he also kept seeing his hand in front of his face. But the odd thing was that his hands had never left his side the entire time he was in the tank. So in a sense, a flotation tank is a vehicle that allows you to not only be out of one's mind, but out of body as well. But let me rein this in. The whole point in making this comparison is that when I open my Akashic Records and I get myself out of the way and I trust in the process so completely that I know I'm going to receive whatever I'm seeking and even more, that's when my mind gets blown open wide. And I can access those glimpses of my eternal soul across all space and time, from time immemorial. Time out of mind, I think, is what they call it. And to me, those four words just pretty much say it all. But you know, getting to that point really does take practice. And boy, oh boy, do I happily practice. Not only have I been doing Akashic readings for myself and others for nearly 20 years, including those 3 years here at the Quest Bookshop, I also work in my records to write books for children and adults. I've done maybe 60 children's books now. Wrote my feng shui book in my records. I also work in my Akashic Records while I study the energy of my feng shui clients' homes. And for some clients who request it, when I have their permission, I go straight into the records of the homes themselves. And in those cases, I often think of that expression, if these walls could talk, because believe me, they do. And a lot of times they have a lot to say. Animals' Akashic Records have a lot to say, too. I knew that was coming. I do that every time I see that slide. I don't know. This is one of our cats, Bengali. And since our other cat's name is Molly, my husband Adrian and I like to call them Good Golly and Miss Molly. So soon after we adopted Bengali, or Good Golly, I went into his Akashic Records to find out why in my dreams, 4 months before we adopted him, he was coming to me in my dreams going, "Mom, I'm ready. Come and get me. It's time. And when I first saw him at the adoption place, it was like, "Oh, that's the cat in my dreams." And he had to come home with us. And so he did. And boy, he's a good golly. I also read the Akashic Records of places. For example, I've gone into the records of Banff National Park to find out why Adrian and I love it so much there, that we've been there a dozen times. And seriously, when we land in Calgary and we drive to Banff, as we get closer and closer to Banff, we just start crying and we don't know why. So I went into the records of Banff and I asked about that. I also went into the records of our favorite mountain, Mount Shasta in California, to learn why we visit it so often that we actually bought a second home to be its next door neighbor. This is the view out our window. And last, but most definitely not least, as I mentioned earlier, with the help of modern technology, I practice and I work in the Akashic Records with my clients and students who live all over the world. It's amazing. This work, it's truly amazing, and it never stops being amazing, which is why I'm so grateful to be here tonight to speak with you about the Akashic Records. So thanks again for the invitation to be here with you tonight. It did my soul lifetimes of good. It truly did. And I hope that my song struck some harmonious chords that will help you sing your songs too. Before I go and take questions, I want to finish the evening by sharing just a few of what I call my favorite Akashisms. They're those amazing, like, lightning strikes of energy and information that have shifted my conscious awareness in instant and irreversible ways. Seriously, once I get an Akashism from my records, it's like I never look at life the same way again. And so I thought I would share a couple of those with you. This is a good one. When you focus on what matters to you most, it becomes the matter that surrounds you. A little story about why they told me this one. I teach feng shui. I'm a feng shui practitioner, and I teach feng shui, and I had a class coming. I had 6 students coming, and they could not have been more different from one another. I mean, ages, interests, you name it. Everything about them was different. And I know, because I've been told in my records that, you know, everybody who comes together for any class, for an evening like this evening, there's one thing that brings them together, and it's like a common core issue, if you want to call it that. And I'm thinking before they get to my house, okay, I don't know what the core issue is here. These people couldn't be more different. And so I opened my Akashic records before they got there, and I said, can you tell me what the core issue is, please? And they said, they've all asked themselves the same question, what's the matter here? And when they ask themselves what's the matter with their lives or with their homes, they all change their minds about what matters to them most. And so they're all here. They've sought out you to be their teacher at this time to help them change and stop asking what's the matter in a way that there's something wrong, but to help them make their outer environments match their inner environments. So the shift that had occurred already in their minds about what matters, they wanted help getting their outer environment to match up with their new intentions. So when we focus on what matters to us most, it truly does become the physical matter that surrounds us. Hopefully it's the matter that supports us. And if not, we have the ability to change it. So this is my favorite all-time enduring Akashism from my master's teachers and loved ones. But there are more. This one I love. In any 50-50 partnership, you can only ever give 100% of your 50%. In other words, you're only one part of the partnership, only 50% of the equation. It takes 2 equal parts to form a partnership. And when you give wholeheartedly to that partnership, you give your part, your partner gives his part or her part, then you've formed a partnership. And that ship can sail very smoothly. This came to me, but it also comes up in other people's readings as well. Because the first time I was kind of lamenting something, and I was like, I give 150%. And they said, well, that's right there is your problem. You got the equation wrong. You can't give 150%. It's impossible. It's energetically impossible. It's impossible. If you're part of a partnership, that means 2 people, you can only give 100% of your 50%. So this is another one of my new favorites. And I get, you know, it's like once these things come through, I get examples or I hear of examples constantly after that. And it's like, yeah, okay, you guys, I get it. So if you don't speak the truth, there will be no way for others to respond in truth. This came, I was asking about something and they said, well, what would you like to happen? And I said, well, I want this. This is my intention. This is what I would like to happen. And they said, so what are you doing to make it happen? Or what are you saying to make it happen? And I was like, I'm too afraid to say, and I just gave this answer. And they said, you know what? If you don't speak your truth, there is no way for others, or for the universe for that matter, to respond in truth. They respond to, oh. And it's just like this mixed messages. It's ambiguous, it's mixed messages, and there's no way for it to happen. So in all of your dealings with everyone, and especially with intention setting, speak your truth. Speak the truth of what you want. And then line yourself up, actions, words, thoughts, everything else, with that intention. But you know, sometimes the hardest thing, at least for me anyway, is to speak the truth to myself. You know, my fears make me just not even want to go there, not even want to admit it. You know, but my deepest desires, what my heart is telling me, if I can start speaking that, and I have, amazing things happen. It's unbelievable. But that's where it's got to start. Because, you know, to not speak the truth, nobody can respond to you, to your truth or in truth. When you say no to one thing, you say yes to something else. This is one that comes up quite a bit. It goes along with speaking your truth. And in keeping with the idea that your no truly does mean no and your yes truly does mean yes, When you say no to the right thing, even when that's incredibly scary, or even when it feels selfish, a lot of times people I read for, it's like, oh, I can't say no, it's selfish. Well, no, not really. Because when you say no to the right things, just watch how the universe lines up all those yeses. So really what's happening is when no is the best answer, it's never the final answer, because on the other side of no, yes is waiting. And often lots of yeses are waiting. So I learned this one, you know, talk about adopting Bengali and Mali. I was supposed to be taking a Reiki class. I was signed up to take my level 2 Reiki attunement, or level 3, I'm sorry. I had been signed up for weeks. I was ready to go. It was tomorrow. I was here. I was giving readings at the Quest Bookshop. And I kept getting this nudge, like, don't go to Reiki tomorrow. Don't. And I committed, but I love my teacher, but I don't want to disappoint anybody, but. And finally they said, if you say no to the Reiki class, we promise you there'll be some amazing yeses afterwards. Okay, so I wrote to my teacher and I was like, I hope you understand me because I don't quite understand why I'm doing this, but I'm canceling. I'm not going to take the class this weekend. I'm going to follow my guidance and I'm going to trust. And thank you, and I'll sign up for the next round. And she was like, oh, no problem. You know, I get how that goes, blah, blah, blah. So I got home that night, and I was missing. We had a cat, Jane, who had passed away, and I was missing Jane, something terrible. So I got into bed, and Adrian, I started to cry. I mean, uncontrollably cry, because I miss my cat. And Adrian said, well, you know, what are you doing tomorrow? I said, well, I was supposed to go to Reiki, but now I'm not. And he said, well, that's because we're going to go get a new cat. And I said, oh, okay. And he said, just we'll wake up, we'll get dressed, we'll go get a new cat. We're going to adopt a new cat. So I had a picture of what I wanted our new cat to be because I had talked to Jane before she passed through her Akashic records. And I got a picture of what she was going to look like, and I didn't know where to find her. But I said, well, how will I know? How will I know where to find you? And she said, be watching for this. And she showed me a picture of what she was going to look like. And it's going to be about 4 months from now, so be watching. And then I started having those dreams about Bengali. Mom, come on, come and get me, I'm ready. And but the cat in my that Jane showed me did not look like Bengali. So I'm about to fall asleep. It's, well, I don't know, 11:30, 12, which is early for me. And my girlfriend calls. And she usually goes to bed at 8 o'clock. And I'm like, what are you doing? How come we're on the phone right now? Why are you not sleeping? She said, you're going to get a cat tomorrow? I was like, yeah. How did you know? She said, I don't know. I just got it in my head. She said, get on this website. This is Red Door, the shelter in the city. Get on Red Door. Let's look for your cat. I was like, Amy, go to bed. She said, no, we're going to do this. So we got on, and I sent her a picture that I had found on the internet of what our next cat was going to look like, and it was Molly. It was a chocolate tortie, black and brown kind of mottled tortie. And she said, there, look, here it is. And her name, it was Adele, right? Her name was Adele on the website. She goes, go get Adele tomorrow. I said, okay. So I emailed Red Door, whatever time it was at that point, I don't know, 1 o'clock in the morning. And I said, if you still have Adele, please hold her. We're coming. We're coming from Downers Grove. It's going to be a drive. We are coming. We will be there. And he wrote back and he said, yeah, she's been here for like a year and a half. Nobody wants her. I said, oh my God, that's our cat. So we went to Red Door, got Adele. I went to pet her. She did that on my hand. I was like, everybody, is this supposed to be my cat? Are you really sure about this? Because she didn't seem to like me all that much. And the guy who was introducing us said, she's very skittish. Her family, they moved and they left her on the street. And so she doesn't feel safe ever. And she's been in the shelter and she loves me. His name was Matt. She loves me, but she doesn't really like too many other people. You'll get to know her. She'll be great. She's the most loving cat there is. Well, of course, Adrian walked up to her and he, it's his cat. What can I say? She loves him. So, but now we've had her, what, 4 years now? She is the most darling, beautiful, loving, sweet cat I have ever seen in my life. So we're about ready to leave with Adele. And Matt says, don't you want to see the kittens? I said, no. No, this is our cat. This is the one. I got it in the records that this is the one. I didn't tell him that, but and he said, well, everybody wants to see the kittens. And I said, okay, fine, let's go see the kittens. So we walked into this room. It was like, Red Door is kind of like a house with bedrooms, you know, that they've made into this shelter. And there are bunnies running around everywhere. And there are cats. And so we walked into the kitten room, which was a bedroom, and there was a lady sitting there in the rocker, and she was rocking this kitten, and she's like, oh, these kids, these are like my kids, you know, and there were probably 10 of them in there, and they're running all around, having a good time. And I was standing and leaning against a file cabinet, and I'm just like, you know, leaning, I'm looking around, I'm like, okay, I've seen enough of the kittens, let's get out of here. I don't want a kitten. And this cat is like doing this to my head. He's on top of the file cabinet in a basket, and he's just tapping me on the head. And I turned around, I was like, what are you doing? So I walked away, and he jumped down, and he came right in front of me, and he backed up, or, you know, went on his back, and it was like, oh, this is the cat from my dreams. He has humongous white paws, bigger than I think I've ever seen. And I was like, Adrian, the cat from my dreams. And he was standing across the room, and he was doing this to me. And I'm like, peace, I know. And he said, no, no, two. We're getting two cats today. So all that to say, when you say no to one thing and it's the right thing to say no to, look at how the yeses open up. These two cats are the love of my life. They bring us so much joy every day. Every day. They are just the most wonderful things. That's one example. I could give you 100. But anyway, that's my favorite Akashism, my story about that Akashism. Speaking of the universe lining things up, once you know what matters to you most, and you speak your intentions clearly and truthfully, and you align your intentions with your actions and your thoughts and your words, things either keep falling in line with your intentions or they fall apart. And that's a good thing, because they don't serve your soul's highest purpose. They don't serve your intentions. So what falls away, for example, okay, I was gonna do this talk and it was gonna be an audio visual with soundtrack, music, my voice, oh! So all I had to do was stand on the side and watch it go, right? And this kid, young man, I said, will you do this with me? He said, absolutely, I'm there for you. I got it, I know this, I went to college for this, we're gonna do this together. So I was like, okay, great, this is gonna be fabulous. So week and a half before tonight, he bailed. And I thought, okay, before I have a conniption fit and start crying and screaming and pounding on the ground like a little two-year-old, I'm gonna ask, what's going on here? And I was told, you need to add the personal touch. You need to do this with your voice. You're gonna be singing, right? You're gonna be singing your song of your creation and your creator. You gotta own the creation. You gotta do this. Just talk, talk like you talk from your heart. So I was like, okay, got it. And I didn't throw a fit. I was over it, like 2 hours. And it's, you know what? What fell away needed to fall away so that this could fall in line. This Akashism first came to me when I was asking in my records about my very difficult relationship with my deceased stepfather. We're all souls just playing our roles. To sum it up, this is what my master's teachers and loved ones told me about that relationship. In his soul role, my stepfather played his human role to the hilt. And believe me, if there's an Academy Awards ceremony in heaven, my stepfather, bless his soul, won hands down for his role of the antagonist in my life. But you know, now that I know that we're all souls just playing our roles, and I know what he was meant to teach me and help me experience in this life, I'm very grateful. I'm very grateful because now I have a really good sense, much better than I ever did, of who I am, but also who I'm not. Because he tried to tell me I was a lot of things that I know I am not. And so it was his antagonism that made me stand up for myself and say, no, 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 you got it wrong. This is who I am. And I'm going to live this way and show this with the rest of my life. So now, really, I can bless his soul. I really do understand that I was able to, and in the moment that my master's teachers and loved ones said that to me, I was able to let go of so much resentment, so much hurt. I mean, he was deceased, and so I couldn't, you know, talk to him, but I could talk to him in my Akashic records as this expanded soul. And we had a conversation, and I was like, I get it. I so thank you. I so thank you, because I'd be a different person today were it not for you. So, great, great acting. And I do thank his soul. This is the most recent Akashism I was given. Deciding to show up is the first step. Deciding how to show up is the next one. I've been experiencing this one. I got it like, I don't know, a week and a half ago or two. I have been experiencing this particular Akashism in so many ways and in so many contexts. It's crazy. And, you know, the idea of how to show up, it can have different meanings, and I've been experiencing that as well. For example, you know, as depicted here, this meaning is to show up awake and aware and to be present and open and ready to welcome whatever opportunities exist for learning, healing, growth. So that's one definition of how to show up. Another meaning for how to show up, though, is to be the whole you and nothing but you. I love this picture. When I found it, I had to use it. In other words, what it means is, you know, show up as your authentic self, your empowered self. Walk your talk, speak your truth, you know, be you as beautifully as you can, because that's why we're here, to sing our song, to be ourselves, and to really be our authentic selves. And I'll just tell you, when I first found this image, I so wanted that to be a lamb instead of a goat. Because I wanted to spell U-E-W-E. But then I realized, you know, in terms of showing up, it flies in the face of being Y-O-U. So I'm glad I did this instead.
Hello to y'all. I just had a question in regards with when you're entering the Hall of Records there. Does it happen as flashes at times for you? Or is it more a continuing drawn out things, because that's what's been happened with me, and then there's like a instantaneous download on whatever subject matter. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You just all of a sudden know everything mm-hmm. about it.
Yeah, your experience is perfect right now. I can say that when I'm doing readings, if I'm reading for somebody else, I will get the information whatever way is best for that person to receive it. Mm-hmm. So if the person is very visual, I'll get pictures and I'll say, oh, I'm seeing this. I'm saying, oh, yeah, you know. But I'm like a big mouth. I talk a lot. I write a lot. Uh-huh. And so when I'm in my own records talking to my masters, teachers, and loved ones, it's like one big long conversation. And sometimes, truly, so much comes so fast that if I had to spit it all out in words, it would be very difficult. It's just one of those, you know, like you said, like a download. And I just feel it and I know it and I don't have to say another word. But it varies. Like when I first started working in the records, it was very different. The way the energy and information came was very different from what it is like now. But mm-hmm. every time I do a reading, it's different based on who's in front of me or what the subject is, what the questions are. So I would say that whatever you're getting now is absolutely perfect for you.
Yeah, because it manifests in different shapes, whether it be a hallway or, you mm-hmm. know, a tube or whatever.
Mm-hmm. It'll change.
Yeah.
It's very possible it'll change. Yeah, absolutely. That's the best thing to do.
Yeah.
Float.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I have one question through the internet. How do we get from being psychically deaf, dumb, and blind to having masters, teachers, loved ones, and access the Akashic Records?
Well, I don't necessarily think that everybody is deaf, dumb, and blind psychically. I do think, though, some people have deliberately kind of shut down their gifts, and this is where the records help, because the records will tell you, you had this experience in this lifetime as a child. You were told, oh, stop seeing those people, they're not, you know, whatever, and so some people close it down. Or in another lifetime, there was some sort of persecution, and that caused the person to say, you know what, if this is how it's going to be, I don't want this. But the records, it's pretty much guaranteed. You know, when I've taught many, many, many classes, no one has ever not accessed the records. So I guess the best way to say it is, it's not contingent upon your psychic abilities. Working in the records, like I used to be like, oh, I want to be psychic. Oh, my friends are psychic. I didn't feel that I had that kind of ability. And it's not contingent upon your psychic abilities. It's contingent upon your willingness and your openness and your trust. And I got really good at being willing, open, and trusting because I'm not psychic, you know. But to say, you know, now that I've said that, working in the records for all these years, it boosts my intuition and it supports my intuition. Sometimes I'll get, you know, an intuitive hit rather than Akashic hit, and I'll go into my records and say, okay, I got this intuitive hit. Can you confirm this? Can you give me a bigger picture for why I can't stand that person, or I'm in love with that person and I've never seen him before? You know, so I hope that answered it. First of all, psychic ability really is separate different from working in the records. And sometimes the answer is in the records about why we are kind of closed down to our gifts in this lifetime. So I would encourage that person to try it.
Good. Could you mention the intuitive and contrasted it to Akashic record reading? Could you just explain a little more the difference between this? Because many of us do say you have an intuitive feeling about something.
I think to an extent we all have intuitive abilities. And it's us tapping into ourselves and that sort of divine spark within ourselves. And we're getting information and it's in the moment. You know, why do I, am I completely drawn to that person or repelled by that person or, oh, turn left, turn right. You know, it's in the moment. It's very here and now in this lifetime. And it serves a beautiful purpose. And as I said, working in the records has really helped me to beef up my intuition, and I'm really grateful for that. But the records themselves, it's like blowing the lid off the top of your head. I don't know how else to put it. We're given so much information, so much karmic backstory and you know, probabilities and possibilities, that instead of looking like at me in a spotlight and seeing, you know, just me on a stage, it gives you like a full view of the stage and all the players. And so the Akashic Records support the intuition in very beautiful ways by giving all kinds of information that we couldn't get from ourselves, because we're actually, like I said, going out of our minds and accessing the divine universal consciousness. And so we have access to a ton more information and energy than just this here and now moment. I mean, the answer can span lifetimes in the records.
Very good. One more question through the internet. What was your first experience with the Akashic Records, and how did you react to it?
My very good friend Amy, 1999, she came, she took a class on how to read the records, and she called me and she said, I learned how to do this thing, and do you want a reading? And I had never really formally heard of the Akashic Records. However, I grew up surrounded by psychics and card readers, and my mom was into all that stuff, and she was reading Edgar Cayce books when I was like 10. And so I heard reading, and I was like, reading, I'm all over it, reading, yeah. And I was like, yeah, open my records. I don't know what this is about, but let's do it. And she opened my records, and we were on the phone. She was far away from me. But when she opened my records, the feeling that I felt, it was like relief. And oh my God, somebody gets me. Somebody sees me. I just burst into sobs. It was like, somebody gets me. And it felt like I was home, too, at the same time. And it was so moving and so beautiful to be understood, you know, in that way. That I was just like, that's it, I gotta do this thing. So I enrolled, I learned how to do it, I learned how to teach it, it's part of my work. And not only do I do readings and teach the Akashic Records, I use it as the umbrella for most of my other work. And you know what, to answer your, or address your question again, when I'm working on a feng shui consultation, for example, I will be in the records for maybe an hour or two at a time. And I get very specific information to the task at hand. I take the floor plan, I take the person's goals and intentions, I put them next to each other, I open my records because I don't have permission to be in the other person's or in their home, and I'll just say, okay, feng shui masters, here's what I see. Can you show me energetically what's happening? And so I use the records in a lot of different ways, but my first experience was like, oh, somebody gets me, they see me. And it was great to be heard and loved. It's such a beautiful, loving, compassionate place.
Is there some way to distinguish between the actual records you're reading and not your imagination gone wild?
That's a great question. Thank you. I could not make some of that stuff up if I tried. No, seriously, though. I mean, really. Sometimes I'll be reading for somebody, actually all the time, and I don't know what's going to come out of my mouth until it comes out. And sometimes I can see the words coming out, and I'm like, holy cow, what is that? And sometimes I'll use words that are not in my lexicon. I'm pretty vociferous, but some words are just not in my lexicon, and I'll be like throwing out all these words. I'm like, what does that mean? We got to look it up now. And so there are times when I have no idea what's coming. But here's where the trust comes in. I have to get out of the way and go, I can't tell her that. Are you kidding? No, you know, I can't do that. I just have to say, I'm going to open my mouth and I'm going to say what they're telling me, and it will make sense to this person, and I trust it. And so I don't question, is it me or is it them? I don't question. In the beginning, everybody does. Is this me or is this you? What's going on? But after a while, with practice, I don't even question that anymore. But that's a great question, because everybody has it. In the beginning, I did.
But this one from the internet is, how long did it take you to, when you first started, to be able to do this? And on average, how long does it take for people just starting to learn how to access the records on a regular basis?
Well, as I said, I've taught people to read the records many, many, many times and in many ways. And by the end of the class, everybody's in the records. Everybody. You know, their abilities vary depending on their trust or whatever, how they're willing to let go. But everybody, by the end of the class, reads the records. Practice is key. Oh my gosh, I can't stress enough how much practice is essential. And trusting and getting out of the way. Because I wasn't psychic and didn't claim any, you know, great gifts, I was like, yeah, show me what to do, I'll do it. You know? And seriously, I'm trying to think. I started reading for people about a month later. And you know what? There's grace in the records. And people who came to me for their early readings, they were novices too. And so their expectations, we met in the middle. You know, their expectations were not so great that I couldn't handle it. And I was able to give them what they needed, even if it was just like, I see a circle, you know. Well, oh, I know what that means. Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, as I practice and hone my ability to be in the records, hold steady, feel what it feels like, know it, then more and more challenging questions will come and experiences will come, but never more than the two can handle together.
I'm wondering about the soul's growth through various lifetimes. You talked about losing your way in some lifetimes, being very expansive and open in other lifetimes. Mm-hmm. Is the trajectory generally upward and outward, mm-hmm. or does the soul just continually go through up and down periods?
I'm sure that there are various ways to look at it and understand that. I don't think that maybe I shouldn't have said I lost my way. I should say I forgot. Because what I had accumulated in terms of knowledge and growth and wisdom, etc., on the soul level, we don't backslide, we don't go backward. How I apply it and how I use it from lifetime to lifetime, sometimes I forget. Or as we were talking about before, sometimes, you know, people shut down their gifts or their abilities or their, or they decide to come into a lifetime and just kind of look to the human, you know, species like a fool. But they're the strongest and most brilliant lights. But they come to help others learn a lesson. Maybe they've learned a lot of lessons and they're pretty ascended. I don't know what's the other word. I can't think of the word. But they're pretty, you know, ascended. But they come back and they have lifetimes where they look really foolish or, you know, whatever. But they're not, because, you know, it takes a strong, brilliant, beautiful, loving soul to put himself or herself in that body to teach others. So I don't think that we go backward. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I've read writers who describe the Akasha record this way, and they would say, they would point out that there have been many universes, you know, one universe comes and goes, another one, et cetera, et cetera. And they describe the Akashic Record as being a record of the evolution of all the universes, and that it guides the universe we're in, you know, in its evolution. Have you ever experienced the Akashic Record this way, or have a comment on that?
I love that. I've never heard that. But as I said in my talk, when I showed that picture of the fractal, the universe and the records are constantly expanding and evolving. So that doesn't surprise me to hear that. And I would say I agree with it. But I've never had that question in the records or that experience. But I love it. I totally love it.
Hi.
Hi.
Do you need to be with the person that you're reading, or can you do it by phone?
99.9% of my readings are by phone or Skype, because a lot of my clients don't live in the States. I have one favorite client who lives in London. Hey, Dina. I don't know if she's awake right now. But we do Skype. Because there's no time and space in the records, there's no need to be in front of each other. And a lot of times, what I've discovered with people who choose and prefer to have phone readings, first of all, they're convenient, but there's a little bit of an anonymity that's, you know, they don't see me, I don't see them, and they're very, it makes them braver. It makes them ask better, not better, but braver questions. So no, I don't have to be present. Doing my readings here at Quest was an interesting experience for me, and I'm glad I did it, because until that point, very few of my readings were in person. But there's no difference in the effectiveness of the reading, either way. That whole no time and space thing is awesome. Awesome! I teach classes. I've got somebody from India, somebody from, you know, Virginia, and they're all, you know, it's great.
There was one question through the internet, which is maybe related to that one that was just answered, but it's got a slightly different meaning, maybe. Do you access the records just by being in the presence of the person, either physically or by phone?
These are such awesome questions. Thank you. As people who have been reading about the records know, there are various methods of accessing. Edgar Cayce, for example, used to put himself into a sleep state, and he would, you know, access the records, say a bunch of stuff he didn't remember when he would wake up, which is why they transcribed it all. I happen to use the pathway prayer process, because it's kind of like the Esperanto. You know, it's like, it's the prayer that works for me and allows me to work with my students, and we're all on the same page. But I also have a personal, private prayer that my masters, teachers, and loved ones gave me. I have a girlfriend who doesn't claim to be in the records, but she'll sit there and say, "What's your name?" And you tell her, and she takes a big, deep breath, and she just off and running. And I know she's in the records. I know she is. So it, you know, there are various methods, myriad ways of accessing the records. I just use a particular method because when there's kind of like a lockstep process to it, I find that people can, you know, they follow the process and they're in. As long as they don't get too much in their heads about it, then it works really well that way. And then when I teach advanced classes. I teach a beginning class, but then advanced classes. If we're all using the same method of access, then that's not a stumbling block. Then we can just, like, use the method, get in there, and do our work. But there are lots of different ways.
So if you don't speak the truth, there will be no way for others to respond in truth. So as we speak, are we, at this point, accessing our Akashic records? And, well, the reason I ask is because what happens when you're dealing with skeptics or, like, angry people, family, you know, friends, if you're speaking the truth, and then all of a sudden you don't have that 50-50 kind of...
I love your question. It's not that I lie. It's just that I know which truths to reveal to whom. I grew up in a big fat Italian family. Most of them, including my mother, who's a dyed-in-the-wool Catholic, she's 94, born in Italy, says her rosary every day. I'm not going to walk into a room and go, "Hey, everybody, you hear about this Akashic record thing?" You know, I don't do that. I don't do it because, number one, I want to honor the records. Number two, I don't want to cause strife. So I'll talk about the family and what kind of food are we preparing, and, "Hey, yous," you know. But I, you know, it's kind of like casting your pearls before swine. I don't raise certain issues in the wrong environment, because it doesn't honor me, it doesn't honor the other person, it doesn't honor the records, it doesn't honor, you know, what I want to honor and keep sacred. So it's not that I don't tell the truth. I try as much as possible to always speak the truth. I just choose which truth goes with which environment. And, you know, I learned it the hard way, though, because before I got into the records, I started practicing feng shui. And I took, such a beating from my family. "What is that?" They called it all kinds of dirty words. I mean, it was bad. And I was like, "But you guys," and I learned my lesson. And, you know, if someone asks me, I am more than happy to discuss. but I don't just go pushing stuff on people, you know.
I have a feng shui question as well.
I'll be here next month.
Really?
Yeah,
feng shui?
Yeah, yeah.
Cool. I have a niece that will not take anything from, like, say, if I say this is grandma's, or she's, what do you think about, like people that, like, if you buy something at a resale shop?
This really is a feng shui question, isn't it?
Is it?
Yeah.
Thank you.
I can answer it. I mean, sure. Some people have really negative associations with antiques and various things. What I would say is go into that person's record and ask why. That's what I would do. I've had aversions or weird feelings about things before, and I'd go into the records and it'd be like, oh yeah, that's when you got your feet cut off, you know. So it makes sense. But your friend that you butt heads with, this is something that I learned from my teacher and that I do all the time. If you feel that somebody is annoying you or you're butting heads or whatever, rather than keep trying to get my own way or give my own advice or whatever, I'll go into my records and I'll say, what's here? What's here for us to learn? There's a mutual benefit and a mutual lesson. What is it? And what's my 100% of my 50%? And that's when I get my part, and then I'm not responsible for the other person, but I know what to do for me and for us as my 100% of my 50%.
I have a friend who is says she gets her answers and information from spirit, mm-hmm. because she had a near-death experience, and so she has no need or desire to access the Akashic records, because when she needs to know something, all she has to do is ask spirit and the answer will come to her. So how does one deal with that?
I say, great.
That's what I said too.
Go to your source, whatever your source of guidance is. That's perfect. It's great.
Okay. Yeah.
If and when she ever decides she wants a bigger picture or a different picture, you know, the records provide that. But all of it works. You know, I'm not one of those people who compartmentalizes, like, mm-hmm. here's the records and here's the this. It's all one big consciousness. It's all one big, you know, body of light and vibration and consciousness.
Universal.
Yeah, so if that's where she goes for her guidance, hey, she's...
I accept her.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that it's helping her to raise her consciousness. Yeah, go for it. Not everybody resonates to the records. Those who do often have a memory of having worked in the records before, or they're drawn to it for a particular reason. Not everybody is. That's okay. They, you know, we do what is personally relevant and useful.